especially, we saw the Crusades kind of resurge in popularity in curriculum and discussion for the obvious reason that it was being used to impose a kind of clash of civilizations frame on the global war on terror conflicts in the Middle East. And it was being done in such a way as to cast Christian America as the sword of the Lord in that context. With Hegseth's service and what we know he has said about that, it is pretty clear that his crusader tattoos are a reference to his service in the war on terror.
So in this last minute we have, if you can respond to him becoming head of this 3 million person organization, the charges against him of spousal abuse, of rape, but they were non-disclosure agreements, non-disparagement agreements, repeatedly of public drunkenness and driving to veterans organizations. Well, I was of financial irregularity in running these two organizations.
This is the thing about Hegseth, right? Is we can talk about his faith, we can talk about his community. The biggest problems with Hegseth, I mean, his beliefs are troubling, but he is wildly unqualified for this role. He is also has a long track record of demonstrating a fairly serious moral unfitness to be in polite society. My biggest concern with that is a man holding these fairly intense, far outside of mainstream beliefs, finding himself in a position well beyond anything he is qualified for or has experience in. I think that that puts us in a position where he is likely going to be leaning on these controversial faith leaders in his life more than somebody with adequate experience for the job might. So I think we do need to be concerned about
Logan, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much. But we'll link to your article in the Colorado Times reporter, Logan Davis. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
That's Doc Watson, one of the many artists you can hear on the Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning, when we share a wide variety of traditional and contemporary folk and roots music with you from 5:30 to 7 a.m. Each week, your hosts Dan Schrammack and Stephen Morrison bring you some of our favorite new releases and plenty of vintage favorites. It's a great way to start your Fridays, discover some new music, and find out about shows and festivals coming to the area. You can also find show playlists and listen to archive shows on demand via our website at kboo.fm. and also via our free mobile app. That's the Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning, where you hear a variety of traditional and contemporary folk and roots music from 5:30 to 7, right here on KBOO. We hope you'll join us.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Washington Governor Bob Ferguson signs an executive order preparing for Trump's immigration crackdown.
Better access to mental health is on the priority list for Washington lawmakers.
And in weather news, there's a chance of snowfall in Portland this weekend.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 27th, 2025. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Ed Trevaglia. Washington State Governor Bob Ferguson signs an executive order preparing state agencies to respond to potential family separations from President Trump's sweeping immigration enforcement. Ferguson's order creates a rapid response team meant to help Washington children who could be separated from their parents by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. It calls together a number of state agencies to collaborate to respond quickly to help children whose parents are deported or detained by ICE. Ferguson recognized the impact Trump's promises of an immigration crackdown would have on Washington State. He said, quote, "It means ripping families apart, kids losing their parents, it means businesses losing their workers, it means communities being significantly altered," end quote. Trump's executive order opens the door to ICE arrests happening at schools and churches, Previously, those locations were considered sensitive. The superintendent of Washington Public Schools issued extra guidance to schools, letting them know what to do if they're approached by ICE. If ICE shows up at a school, teachers and staff should tell the principal, the superintendent, and parents before telling ICE anything. Superintendent Rakedahl said, quote, "Our state constitution says that every child residing in our borders shall have access to basic education. It doesn't say every citizen."
Faith leaders in the Northwest and around the country are highlighting the impact that Trump's immigration order is having on their congregations. They say fear has spread among their congregations and undocumented worshipers may be more confined to their homes than before. Churches and other worship spaces are no longer off limits to immigration and customs enforcement. One reverend in Portland, W.J. Mark Knutson, told the Associated Press he intends to offer sanctuary to undocumented migrants at Augustana Lutheran Church. He said, quote, "Theologically, we'll stand our ground against the government. An unjust law is no law at all. These are sacred spaces," end quote.
Washington mental health providers say thousands of residents face barriers to treatment, while providers are burdened by low reimbursement rates and excessive red tape. A new bill promises to address these and other issues to increase access to mental health care. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Washington state mental health care providers are rallying behind a new bill aimed at addressing what they are calling the mental health care crisis. Research shows nearly half of Washington counties lack a psychiatrist, and many mental health care professionals in the state don't accept Medicaid or other public insurance. Jake Swanton with Inseparable says insurance companies blame a lack of providers, but he adds low reimbursement rates and administrative burdens imposed by insurance companies play a role in the shortage.
It's forcing a lot of these providers who are just small business owners or solo practitioners in some cases out of network and forcing them to not take insurance so that they can run their business.
Research shows in-network visit reimbursement is 22% higher for medical clinicians than for mental health practitioners providing the same services. House Bill 1432 aims to update Washington laws so insurance companies follow standard care guidelines while easing administrative hassles and financial risks for providers. London Breedlove with the Washington State Psychological Association says the pay disparity, along with stressful conversations with clients about coverage, contribute to the mental health provider shortage. She adds historical stigma surrounding mental health is partly responsible.
And we feel it every day, both in terms of, right, these kinds of conversations that we're having to have, and also in terms of how we're reimbursed and how we're paid for our work.
House Bill 1432 also addresses clawbacks, where insurance companies retroactively decide a mental health visit wasn't medically necessary. Swanton explains this practice forces providers to repay reimbursements, causing financial strain, while leaving patients with surprise medical bills. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Snow is possible for Portland this weekend, but don't break out your shovels just yet. After a potential record-setting January dry spell, colder and wetter weather are moving into the area this weekend. Portland has only seen less than 2.5 inches of rain so far this year, according to the City of Portland Hydra Rainfall Network. A mix of rain and snow are forecast for the Willamette Valley, and snow levels should get down to 1,000 feet of elevation. This is good news for local Mount Hood ski resorts and sledders, but maybe less so for travelers. With colder temperatures possible, Portland may see snow Sunday morning. The National Weather Service says there is a 25% chance that snow will reach the valley floor, but there is limited confidence in this prediction.
People in LA will suffer the after effects of the fire disaster for many years to come, so nonprofits are trying to anticipate and meet their needs. Suzanne Potter spoke to some nonprofit leaders to learn more.
The LA fires will continue to impact people's health for many years to come, according to disaster relief experts. The fires cause severe mental health issues, displacement, and financial ruin, which make it harder for people to care for their health. Talia Myers with the nonprofit Direct Relief says the disaster takes a heavy toll far beyond those killed in the fires.
When a natural disaster hits a community, there are long-term impacts that cause increases in morbidity and mortality, but that aren't always accounted for in the death toll or in public perceptions. It's something that the larger public does need to start thinking about.
A lot of people were struggling to afford food and shelter in Los Angeles even before the devastating fires. Direct Relief is working to meet people's immediate needs, distributing medications, medical equipment, and supplies to shelters like the one at the Pasadena Convention Center. And they provided N95 masks that are being handed out free at Gap stores in LA. But they are also working to support community clinics and health centers, which will need to ramp up services for the long term. Fernando Fierro is with AltaMed Health Services, which runs community clinics in the Pasadena and Altadena area and is tending to patients in the shelter. He says the donated supplies are crucial to helping people fill prescriptions lost in the fire and get continuing care.
It's transitioned to more of just providing the day-to-day healthcare support. It is flu season, so managing public health from the infection prevention standpoint.
Clinics are also watching out for persistent environmental health risks because exposure to smoke can cause or exacerbate respiratory conditions, and bacteria and hazardous chemicals can persist in soil and get into the water supply. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The first days of a second Trump administration have seen a flurry of executive action, prompting scrutiny over the impact of these changes on vulnerable populations. For gun violence prevention, the situation is a little murkier, and gun safety advocates are watching with worry. Mike Moen has more.
President Donald Trump has been busy signing executive orders since his inauguration. Gun violence prevention advocates in Minnesota hope he isn't aggressive in undoing recent work to keep communities safer. The White House website for the Office of Gun Violence Prevention, created under the Biden administration, recently went dark. Staffers insist sudden online changes are a formality as they retool under new leadership, hinting that landing pages for key topics will be restored. But Maggie Emery with the group Protect Minnesota doesn't feel reassured much of the office's mission will be maintained.
We were finally seeing some of those rates of gun violence go down, you know, especially here in Minnesota.
Gun violence deaths in Minnesota were down 5% in 2023, the last year for available numbers. And the National Brady Organization credits the Office of Gun Violence Prevention for supporting the ATF in shutting down more than 800 rogue gun dealers in the U.S. While the future is uncertain for this White House initiative, Trump has dismantled the new school safety committee that included parents of school shooting victims. Trump administration officials say they want to prioritize national security matters. But Emery says despite recent progress, gun violence is still a public health crisis in the U.S. She adds the initiative under President Joe Biden was bringing to light how rural areas are affected.
We know that the Office of Violence Prevention on the federal level was looking at what can we do to reduce rates of gun violence, not only in urban areas, but in rural areas where folks are really the most impacted in Minnesota. You know, guidances and legislation around safe storage is now looking more unlikely.
More than 70% of gun deaths in Minnesota are from suicides, and Emery says most are in rural areas. If federal solutions fall by the wayside, she hopes Minnesota lawmakers pass a state law for safe gun storage this year. In Trump's first term, bump stocks, the rapid-fire gun accessories, were banned. However, the U.S. Supreme Court later struck down that order. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
President Trump's border czar says he supports ICE raids in schools and churches. Colombia's president backs down after saying his government won't accept U.S. immigration deportation flights. And Vice President J.D. Vance defends Trump's January 6 pardons. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Message needs to be clear. There's consequences for entering a country illegally. If we don't show there's consequences, you're never going to fix the border problem.
Tom Homan, President Donald Trump's border czar, is standing by the administration's plans to send immigration agents into sensitive areas like schools and churches. During an interview with ABC, Homan added Congress needs to authorize more funding for deportations so Trump can fulfill the central campaign promise. Meanwhile, Trump is imposing tariffs and a travel ban on Colombia after the Latin American country turned away two planes carrying migrants. Along with blocking deportation flights from the U.S., the Colombian government is now retaliating with tariffs of their own. Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says the dispute misses the point.
We need to understand why people are coming to the southern border of the United States and mitigating that in the first place. And I am tired of hearing from people who cannot point out Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Guatemala on a map, telling us about how to mitigate the millions of people seeking refuge.
Critics of immigration argue they take jobs, drive down wages, and burden community resources. New data from Kentucky finds migrants there added $14 billion to the economy. Anthony Capote with the Immigration Research Initiative says they're 5% of an otherwise rapidly aging workforce and own more than one in seven businesses.
Immigrants are really embedded throughout Kentucky's economy. They make up 12% of construction laborers, 24% of software developers, and 16% of physicians.
Pete Hegseth has been officially sworn in as U.S. Defense Secretary after the Senate confirmed his nomination by a single vote. Three Republican senators voted against him, including Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says Trump technically violated the law when firing more than a dozen inspectors general without notifying Congress beforehand. Graham says Trump is just picking the people he wants.
So I'm not, you know, losing a whole lot of sleep that he wants to change the personnel out. I just want to make sure that he gets off to a good start. I think he has. I'm very supportive of what he wants to do in America.
The White House website for the Office of Gun Violence Prevention, created under the Biden administration, recently went dark. People working for fewer gun deaths say they fear much of the office's successful work will be derailed. Finally, Vice President J.D. Vance is defending Trump's unconditional pardons of 1,500 January 6 rioters. Vance says the administration examined each case individually and concluded there was a massive denial of due process of liberty and constitutional rights. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. On this episode, why Oregon needs an environmental rights amendment. At 6, it's Labor Radio, talking with striking doctors and nurses at Providence Hospitals in Oregon. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cold and clear with an overnight low of 29 degrees. A severe weather advisory is in effect for the Portland metro area until tomorrow morning. Wind chill will make temperatures feel as low as 25 degrees, and long exposure could result in hypothermia. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 51. Today in history, in 1945, Soviet troops entered Auschwitz, Poland, freeing the survivors of its network of concentration and extermination camps, where over a million Jews, Romani, and other people were killed by the Nazis. The date is recognized as International Holocaust Remembrance Day. The quote of the day is from American writer John Updike, who wrote, quote, "A leader is one who, out of madness or goodness, volunteers to take upon himself the woe of the people. There are few men so foolish, hence the erratic quality of leadership in the world."
Thousands of Native patients in Montana need the state to renew a Medicaid expansion. And the Siletz tribe will use $1.5 million in federal grant money to bring sea otters back to the Oregon coast. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana tribal leaders say the health of their people hinges on whether lawmakers renew the state's Medicaid expansion program. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
If state lawmakers don't act, nearly 14,000 indigenous Montanans could lose health coverage under Medicaid expansion. When legislators renewed the program in 2019, they implemented a sunset for mid-2025. There are two bills in the legislature that would make the program permanent. Another would end expansion. Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribal Councilmember Jennifer Finley told lawmakers Medicaid expansion is a vital lifeline in tribal communities.
It provides economic growth on every reservation in Montana with the creation of jobs. at the Confederation Kootenai Tribal Health. This has meant tribal members that follow their dream to become doctors, pharmacists, can return home to provide much needed services to our people, which builds confidence and trust in our healthcare system.
Finley and others say expansion is crucial because the Indian Health Service is woefully underfunded. Medicaid is often the only way tribal members can pay for care. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
After centuries of overhunting by fur traders, sea otters have largely disappeared from the Oregon and Northern California coasts. But as KLCC's Brian Bull reports, the Siletz tribe is trying to bring them back with the help of a $1.5 million grant.
The three-year grant comes from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and will bolster efforts made by the Siletz and other regional tribes. Siletz tribal member Robert Kenta says sea otters have a revered role in his culture.
They figure prominently in our stories as a relative and a near neighbor, I guess. They bring wealth and good times and abundance.
Sea otters also serve an important role in the environment by eating invasive crustaceans like green crabs and by restoring and maintaining kelp forests.
There's also oxygenation and coastal erosion buffering when we have kelp forest habitat in the nearshore ecosystem. So there's lots of benefits, and we just see a degrading habitat with sea otter absence.
Kenta says the tribe and its partners will likely relocate sea otters from locations on the Pacific coast where the population is healthier. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
On Friday, New Mexico U.S. Senators Martin Heinrich and Ben Ray Lujan joined three other senators to reintroduce the Radiation Exposure Compensation Reauthorization Act, known as RECA. The program compensates Americans exposed to radiation by government nuclear programs. The Senate passed the bill last Congress, but the House of Representatives failed to pass reauthorization before its expiration deadline. Indigenous people in the Southwest are among those who've been impacted, including the Navajo Nation, where uranium mining was critical in the making of the atomic bomb. Indigenous people have been advocating for RECA's reauthorization. Last fall, members of several tribes, including the Navajo Nation, Laguna Pueblo, and Zuni Pueblo, raised funds to travel by bus from New Mexico to Washington, D.C., to urge lawmakers to revive the program. Senators Heinrich and Lujan say it's long overdue for Congress to pass RECA and say they remain committed to getting it extended and expanded. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, paused an initiative about diversity and inclusion in clinical trials for cancer drugs. The webpage for Project Equity, launched in 2021, was intended to ensure that cancer drugs were evaluated for approval based on data from a diverse group of study participants. Now, that website has gone dark. The removal appears to be part of the Trump administration's push to eliminate programs that deal with diversity, equity, and inclusion and accessibility, or DEIA. The FDA program developed policies to make clinical trials for treatments more accessible to people who had been underrepresented in this research in the past. Historically underrepresented groups in cancer research include racial and ethnic minorities, rural inhabitants, sexual and gender minorities, and people who don't speak English as a first language. Project Equity helped the FDA develop formal guidance around diversity action plans. The FDA would then tell pharmaceutical manufacturers how clinical trials should be conducted to best support drug approval. Several guidance documents were offline early this week, but at least one of them has been put back. There is a formal process for removing guidance documents, but that seems to have been ignored in this case. Experts say diversity in clinical trials is scientifically necessary. Clinical trials are designed to test the safety of new treatments and see how well they work against a specific medical condition. Even if a drug or combination is successful in a clinical trial, clinicians cannot always predict how they will work in the real world. This is especially true if the population studied in the trial does not resemble the group who will be treated with the drugs once they're approved. The FDA said, quote, HHS has issued a pause on mass communications and public appearances that are not directly related to emergencies or critical to preserving health. This is a short pause to allow the new team to set up a process for review and prioritization. There are exceptions for announcements that HHS divisions believe are mission critical, but they will be made on a case-by-case basis. End quote. Robert Califf, the most recent FDA commissioner in the Biden administration, said, quote, It's hard for me to understand why anyone would be opposed to clinical trials, including the variety of people for whom the drug or device is intended. That's the essence of the FDA guidance." End quote.
At least one Oregonian's January started out better than expected. A person has come forward with a winning ticket for the $328.5 million Powerball jackpot. The ticket was sold at Fred Meyer in Beaverton, but the identity of the winner has not yet been revealed. The store's manager, Stephen Longnecker, told the Oregonian, quote, "We're all pretty excited. I was at a loss. It's something I never thought I'd see," end quote. The store that sold the ticket will receive $100,000 and plans to donate half to the Oregon Food Bank as part of the Fred Meyer's Zero Hunger, Zero Waste mission, according to the Oregon Lottery. Fred Meyer President Todd Kammeyer said, quote, "Hunger and food insecurity are critical issues across the state. We hope these funds will help feed families across the community as we work to end hunger in Oregon." The $328.5 million payout almost matched the $340 million payout in 2005 that was the second biggest in U.S. lottery history, and comes less than a year after a Portland man and his wife won $1.3 billion in a Powerball jackpot in April of 2024. Since the Oregon Lottery started selling tickets in 1985, the state has earned nearly $16.5 billion for economic development, public education, outdoor school, state parks, veteran services, and watershed enhancements.
Employees around the country who work longer hours to boost productivity are putting their mental and physical health at risk, according to a new report. The report says work burnout can create mental health issues and long-term physical ailments if some modifications are not made. Terry D. has more on the story.
New research is finding extra responsibilities at work can take a heavy toll. A report from Scripps Health shows a link between mental health disorders and work burnout. According to the report, emotional, physical, and mental exhaustion from continuous and excessive stress can lead to burnout. Left untreated, this can cause short-term sleeping difficulties and digestion problems. Resume Now career expert Keith Spencer says burnout is more than feeling overwhelmed, and he warns employees should heed the alert signs before their symptoms are unmanageable.
Burnout can also lead to and exacerbate issues like anxiety and depression. And in fact, signs of burnout often mirror other mental health symptoms like chronic fatigue, irritability, and detachment.
Over time, researchers say extreme overload can contribute to unhealthy relationships and lead to more serious health issues like heart disease and chronic muscle pain. Spencer advises coping mechanisms like setting work boundaries or finding mental health support. A 2019 study by JAMA Health found untreated mental illness cost nearly 430,000 Hoosiers more than $4 billion. Researchers say as stress levels build, many workers delay taking a break from an unhealthy work environment. Reasons can include unwillingness to leave tasks behind for a coworker or no money for a vacation. Spencer says if the environment is so toxic you think often of leaving, there are a few things to consider.
I do think it's important to kind of have that honest and ongoing discussion with yourself. Are there some boundaries that I can set at work that might alleviate some of these issues that I'm experiencing? It's really hard to say this is the moment when you should walk away or this is the moment where you should realize that nothing is getting better.
Spencer says striking a balance can help reduce stress or burnout if you cannot leave your job. He believes you can prevent burnout, but it will require some effort from you or the company. This is Terry D. for Indiana News Service.
Parents of young children could use some help now and then. Research shows a new app offering online lessons as well as one-on-one coaching helped rural Oregon parents with their parenting and mental health struggles. Isabel Charlet reports.
Researchers at the University of Oregon say a new online parenting skills program has helped improve mental health for rural Oregon families. After using the app called Family Checkup for 3 months, parents reported a decrease in depression symptoms and increased confidence in their parenting. Kate Hales is on the research team and says the program uses techniques like focusing on parents' strengths and children's positive behaviors.
Family Checkup really views the parent as the expert on their own parenting and their own family and focuses on their own personal goals. locals.
Hale says the app is for families with young children and is based on an in-person program. She adds it's designed to help rural families who face challenges with transportation, scheduling, or stigma that prevent them from getting mental health support. About a third of the parents in the study had significant levels of depression when they enrolled, and about a third were at risk for opioid misuse. Hale says the program starts with parents' own wellness.
We know from research that parents really need to be able to regulate their emotions in challenging moments with toddlers, because that will happen regardless of how effective of a parent you are.
Parents access the program through their smartphones. It has science-backed lessons and opportunities to meet online with trained parenting coaches. Hale says parents can work through the program at their own pace and meet with counselors on their own time, allowing them to multitask if needed.
That kind of squeezing it into life is not really possible when we think of traditional mental health, or even like kind of telehealth Zoom sessions.
The next step, says Hales, is to gauge the effectiveness of the program over a longer period of time with trained providers who aren't involved in the research. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 27th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and Ed Travaglia. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Mike Moen, Terry D., Suzanne Potter, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Ed Travaglia. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range.